And I think I must have let them know because there was no more tug on the rope.
It's clear in your...
I can remember the things I shouldn't remember, but I can't remember what I did yesterday.
No, and then you come to me, you know, and you say, you know, that person, he's in such and such a department. You know who he is.
I remember names, oh, I'm terrible.
Who's doing the talk?
Well, we can overdo this talking business, but when you reach my age, that's about all you can do.
I wouldn't say that, Daddy.
Yeah. I have a bad reputation of being poison.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they think they're weeds, I guess.
And weeds.
Yeah. You know, let me tell you.
I agree. And where we live, we've had the worst siege with these, you know, these saws that snarl.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been cutting down trees, yeah.
Power saws. And every day they find something else to saw.
Yeah.
Gets they're on your nerves.
They have the equipment, they have to use it. That's the trouble.
Right when you don't want to hear.
Well, I think it was the AARP that was meeting up at the rec center this morning, and that's the day they take to mow the lawn.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Something about machinery that's artificial and it's hard on the nerves.
You take this so much out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to get away from it.
Something being out here where it's so quiet, it's nice to be here.
Yes, I used to run them on the ranches quite a bit. And I had some while I was a farm foreman on the experiment station farm. I tried to keep up with the equipment there, and you know how a colored man is. He never stops to oil anything, and that piston goes around pretty fast and burns itself up.
Well, what can you do when it does? Can you put in a new one?
Well, it wears it out with the sand, and it wears out much quicker. See, it's a round knob like a ball of socket joint. And I rode up there one day on the mule and said, Henry, I never want to see this thing dry again. You keep that oil. So it's always swimming in oil, it's wearing itself out. Well, I never did, because every time he saw me come across the field, he jumped off and put some oil. But otherwise, he wouldn't. That's way down.
Yeah.
We had an interesting thing happen the other day. A colored man came to the door and wanted to borrow our grass rake for some neighbors way down the street from us. I mean, not on our block. And he borrowed it, and then next thing you know, he was wanting our lawnmower to do another job.
He wants to keep himself in business on my equipment.
Is that right?
That's normal.
That's normal.
Yeah, that's right.
Holding that lawnmower, I got a new one. It is not workable. And run it into any kind of bricks and stuff, and you wouldn't have anything.
Especially if it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know the people where he was working. It's an apartment house, and the tenants change often.
And yeah, it seems a little hard-hearted not to loan somebody something, but it just doesn't
work. Well, we let him have the grass rake, but we didn't let him have more.
It just doesn't work.
Well, I'm surprised that you didn't let him have the more.
I am.
You are?
I'm fed up.
Oh, now, Mr. Nathan, I don't believe it.
What you going to do, sir? Oh, I see.
Well, if
he's... I thought you were going to fill it.
If he's in business, he ought to come equipped.
Well, that's not the way...
Well, they're making good money an hour now. He could afford to buy a grass rake, please.
Well, you think so?
They depend on somebody furnishing them. You know, if they gave him enough money to buy two hammers, he'd bring it up, but he wouldn't buy a hammer.
But you know something, Mr. Naylor? I look around these neighbors, these colored people who don't have anything. If they need a tractor, someone of their buddies has something that they can borrow.
Yes.
It all works in like blood.
They have a community.
When I couldn't get it, they could.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wouldn't. They're
a little different from us. They're two different cultures, and we have to understand that. And black is black, and white is white, and it isn't identical by any means. trouble is, where are our psychologists? You know, I hope you're not much of a psychologist, too, are you?
Yes, no, sir.
Why can't we come up with the wisdom necessary? Every race has its pride, they do. And give them a place under the sun in which they can feel proud of their position.
Yes.
And if you can do that, now they feel that they're under everything, and that's dangerous and bad.
Yes.
But how can you keep them proper respect for everybody in some way so that they can earn what they get? You don't do them any good by giving. That just weakens them. But how can we achieve that end so that they have a world in which they can amount to something or feel they can? Can that be brought about some way? I'm not smart enough to, of course, but I can visualize that a lot of our trouble, racial trouble, is because they feel they're under everything, and they are, of course. But we can't let them feel that way because it makes them vicious.
Yeah.
Some fellows know how to do things. We're a passé generation.
You don't think like a passé generation to me.
On the other hand, they're going to have to because we won't be here to do anything about it.
No, we won't be here long.
Oh, Mr. Newman, don't you
talk. And you can't fool the man
with
a sickle forever.
According to the averages, that's the situation.
Ms. Neelan, what all have you done?
Oh, everything.
Nothing much.
Just name it. I know. I read the papers.
Everything. First, the biggest achievement, he got along well enough with me not to quit. I brought her down to the three.
Well, that's an accomplishment, I realize. I can see that.
That's one of the biggest.
How are you taking all my forks for you?
I didn't think you needed forks.
My family said it would last about 6 weeks.
Is that right?
Take a girl away from the city and good home and a good job.
Yeah. Where'd you take her to?
Come down to the Flatwoods there. I
In
did
Flagler
chop the
County?
Wood. I did chop the wood, though.
Yeah.
Well,
I was afraid to let her use the axe because she might cut her hand off or foot, and then I wouldn't have any help.
Thank you. That was nice.
Pardon for a few
people,
years.
People, I've always wanted to do welfare work, and I have done a lot of volunteer welfare work.
Welfare work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, see.
All these talks you give around here.
She's a graduate of Columbia University and Barnard College, and she's good on math, so she had to see that the young farm girls there that were failing in math made their exams in math, things like that.
I don't want to take this away from you if you want to
finish. Yes, thank you.
Well, I enjoyed the experience in Flagler County because, you see, that gave me an opportunity to live with people who were good Florida crackers and learn something about them. And you'd never get that if you just came here to Gainesville.
Well, what'd you learn about the crackers?
A lot about their viewpoint.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about it.
mainly is they're pretty deep. That is, this is the way I felt about it, was that they're always smooth in your presence, but watch out. that's all the front. You just probably better know what's behind it.
Yeah.
But the one thing.
what do you think of them particularly?
I like them a lot. I admire them a lot. They have their pride and they have their reason for their pride, and I'm standing by them 100%.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't lived with them.
Well, they're different in this way. We had some Yankees come down there, and one time, you know, a Southerner. In our type in Florida at least. What state are you from?
Tennessee.
Tennessee may be the same. He has a problem, and it's a pretty serious problem. And he comes and he sits on your porch and you chat for maybe a half an hour, maybe longer. And he inquires about your family and how everything is going and you having any troubles. And finally gets ready to leave, and then he mentions the principal reason for his call. And it may be a pretty important thing, too, but he's not going to let on that he came there for that reason.
Yeah. Well, you know,
do you have a special case that you could tell us about, some particular person?
No,
this would be very interesting.
I don't know that I do.
Now, just pull it out of your mind.
The thing of it is, I've worked with several people, and I can't pinpoint it right now. I for the minute, tell you about one case. It was during the war in PTA, while we had to go around and interview the parents of the children that were getting the free lunches at school, or would be eligible to get the free lunches at school. And so we went out to Aradhana, and the mother had died, and the father was left with five children. He'd put two out for adoption, and he was trying to raise the other three. And they didn't even have a cake of soap in the house, so we got them some soap so that they at least could be clean. And so they were getting the lunches at the school. Well, they were to get them, rather. Well, the lunches hadn't started yet. This was all a program that was in process of being done. And I lived near the school, so I said, all right, you can come by my house each morning. And I fixed up three lunches for the three children. So when the lunchroom opened, I said to the oldest girl, well, now you won't be wanting to come anymore because you're going to get your lunch at school. Oh, no, ma'am, she said. We didn't get any lunch. We're not getting any lunches. So I continued, and we had a meeting of the PTA board. Ms. Metcalf, you know, was principal of the school for so many years, and she was there. And so I just brought it up casually and said, well, this family wasn't getting their lunches yet. They hadn't gotten on the list yet. She looked at me. She said, Mrs. Nealon, they were the first on the line. And you find out so often when you're dealing with people that are under everything, let's say, they're pretty unprincipled with it, too, and you just have to take that and don't let it worry you.
Well, now, what sort of people were they, Ms. Nealon?
Well, they...
Farm people?
This man, I don't know, he probably tried to have a farm, but it wasn't much farm, and he was pretty low down in the scale of human
ability.
Development and ability.
Yeah.
So, and of course, I don't know that their father would have done a thing like that, but the children did.
Well, do you think of the crackers as being pretty far down in the scale?
No, I don't.
No.
I think that they don't perhaps have so much education, but they have a lot of good native wit.
Yes.
That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, it's like the professor that is asking this fellow without an education how he happened to hit on such a good idea. Just mother wit.
Well, you know, talking about the default audio child, this is ample. Thank you.
I'm sure you I didn't.
You have put up here a thief.
Talking about the difference, you know, we had two neighbors back there, and there was this man, a regular. Well, he was a Florida man. He hadn't always lived in that community. But this other man had come down from the area of Middle West North, Chicago, or in there somewhere. And they were all getting potatoes at the dock, that is, they were delivered at the dock for their crop, plant. And so this northern man figured that the southern man had gotten his potatoes by mistake.
Uh-huh.
So he comes up in just true Yankee fashion, direct and to the point, no holds barred, and said, you got my potatoes.
Uh-huh.
Just like that.
Made the
southerner blister. Oh, that southerner was so provoked. Well, you know, if you'd gone up there and said, well, how's your wife and how are the children, and talked on and on, then finally said, well, say, by the way, did you get my potatoes?
Yes.
You know, it's just a different approach, and it's interesting.
Yankee
blurts
right out.
How those things
right
come
out.
About.
Yeah.
And that isn't the way it's done in the South, is it?
Not where I came from, Mr.
I know, and I think it's, I like it. I think it's better to be more smooth and easygoing and not have to work as if you're grinding out something so the next minute there'll be something else.
Well, the South, what I've learned about it is much longer on courtesy and good manners. Where did the South learn that? Is it part of English custom that has come through the generations, or how did it happen that way? The Westerners are rough as all get out. There's nothing soft or gentle about them.
Well, it was a revelation to me to see in 1925 we had that hurricane. And we had been down to Orlando. In fact, we'd taken some neighbors down to some kind of religious meeting. And the bridge was out when we got home, and we couldn't get home. So we had to stay at this old pioneer's house. And we walked from the bridge place over to their house and soaked to the skin, because you can imagine walking in the rain. So this lady of the house, she was a big stout woman, and she fixed me up in one of her wrappers. I really was lost twice. But what interested me so much, see, we stayed there, I guess, a couple of days and nights, was that the table was set. There were some meat bones that were left, and the meat was mostly off of them. And the sugar bowl had a great big place out of it. And everything else in harmony. And every meal, those meat bones came back on the table. And you know, the way I was brought up, you wouldn't even have asked them to eat unless you could have had everything just right.
Yes.
I had to learn that. It didn't make any difference if you caught your shirt off, all right, you caught your shirt off.
Yeah.
But, and it was, of course, I didn't mean to be critical, but it was just such a difference to me the way they did. And we slept on a corn husk mattress, and you couldn't breathe. What, the whole house know you were turning on?
Yeah.
My, how it rustled. Every time I move your elbow, it crackled.
Well, what do you
find? I'm not that kind of sleeper. I flop around a lot.
From Miss Neal, and you ought to go to this country store down here, Wooden Swing. The other day, Guy and I went down for two little things, and the storekeeper, there was a colored person there buying a week's supply of groceries, and it took us 30 minutes. We stood there until we could pay for our purchases. And you know, we weren't a bit upset, because if we'd have been in a hurry, it'd been different. But we just knew that this is the way he would get to us when he could, and he wasn't going to hurry.
No.
And he whistled all the time.
That's interesting.
Well, he had to add up the count.
Yeah.
And they had got in the, he generally got that done ahead of time. But this time, the, the welfare checks came in early and caught him.
And
then he had to buy some more groceries. They bought some more groceries. And it was a good long time.
Mm-hmm. They're never in a hurry.
And that was a kind of a curse.
What do you think of as a cracker, Mr. Neal?
What do I do?
The crackers. What do you think of when you think of crackers?
Well, they're a little different crowd of people than the Yankees in many ways. But my experience with them, I'm just like Adelaide here. I admire the people.
Well, now, down in Flagler County, when you went down there, there's all crackers.
Mostly, and they never did pretended anything else. They'd always say, well, we crackers don't do that, and we crackers don't do the other.
Yeah.
And it was not considered a slurring remark at all.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It never has been in my book.
Yeah.
They're just different people. I don't know where did the expression originate.
But they're not in it. They're all gone now.
Just about.
Yes, it's too bad.
Too bad.
We have lost something.
There is in the minds of foreigners a kind of cracker talk. I don't know whether there really is or not, but I hear ever so often I hear someone say, "Now he talks like a cracker."
In Paris, in the city, in a terminal, either where airplanes come in or cars come in or something, and listen to the different people who are all speaking English, but just a little words.
Found that out. You know, when I came down here south, from the far west, California, northern California, out in the mountains, I didn't talk the way the folks did in the south, and they noticed it right off, and have to say more than a half dozen words. Well, y'all and the different expressions that they had, and I never tried to imitate that in the least. But after 5 years, I got in the service, and I was up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire there, getting on a different big battleship, and I went ashore that night, and a bunch of sailors came in, and I said, "Where are you guys from?" "California," they said. And I said, "Well, that's my state." We'd been chatting a few minutes. "That's my home state." "Where do you get that brogue you got in California?" See, they noticed the difference right off. But on the other hand, when I used to get out in the backwoods with Florida people, and I'd have to explain some things about trees and forestry, because it was a community meeting and they wanted somebody to tell them something about their pine timber.
Yeah.
Might have been marketing problem or planting or something. Well, some old fella sits against the tree back there and he squints up there once in a while and doesn't say anything. Finally says, "Mister, where might you be from?"
He knows.
I said, "Well, I guess I've been here 50 years, but I guess I don't have the right language yet."
Well,
I lost
you,
out in both places.
You don't get out in the woods much anymore, Mr. Needham.
No, not
that's right.
I do too, son, because I don't like to stay away from them altogether. You don't learn much till you get in the woods.
Well, whereabouts do you go in the woods now?
Forest,
I mean, my 1,000-tree mixed randomized hardwood planting.
Well, I'm talking about where the crackers are.
Oh, out where the country people are. And there are not many of them left. Every time I go out there, I get disappointed because I meet a man from Maine or Massachusetts.
Mainly, that's what you do. Gainesville, in
too
fact,
many
the
of them are foreigners.
Going so much that way. Yeah.
And now and then you see one.
So you
a real gentleman.
You don't learn anything unless you're in the woods.
Good deal, but I studied because I wanted to know, and they studied because they wanted to pass an examination, and there's a difference.
There's a difference. I wish the students that went now would, too. You know, there's so much emphasis put on the fact that if you get a college education, you'll be eligible for a better job, and that, to me, is the wrong reason to go to college.
Yeah.
Oh,
no reason.
That isn't enough
like
reason.
No, I think they definitely
I never
should
dreamed
want an
of
education.
Going into public work. I had no idea of that at all. I studied agriculture because I was in the state 3,000 miles from home where everything was different, and I wanted to learn how to go in the
That's
state
right.
in which I
That's
was
right.
going to work.
I remember when I came down here, I didn't know what
area there. They do a lot of dry farming. Did you hear something about dry farming here?
Well, that's what I call it. They put these melons in. That's dry farming
it
in
is.
My
That's all practically the same thing. In Oregon, western Oregon and Washington, they plant wheat, hoping for rain.
Yes, that's
yeah.
right.
Oh, I see. That's dry farming.
That's dry farming.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, now, they put this down, you see, this, they, what do you call it? They,
Ancient rain, or rain of waves. Well, he wasn't going to use it.
He wasn't going to use fertilizer.
Well, there's some things, like in my co-op, for instance, one of the members, we ship the same number of barrels of potatoes. And I had a slight problem. It was a very poor price year. Bumper crops, but not any price is often the case. Anyway, we had an awful lot of rain, unusual amount of rain, and it washed out the fertilizer, and the potatoes didn't get enough to fill out. So I put nitrate of soda down my potato rows there because I could see there were not going to be enough ones made. It didn't swell them up enough to make ones because the fertilizer washed out. Well, we both sold somehow the same number of barrels, and he wanted to know, how was it that I had $30 and he didn't have anything on the sale? And I bought about $5 worth of soda. Well, I said, I don't know, but let's check into this thing. And I found out, after looking at the record, that his percentage of number twos, barrels with number twos in it, was much higher than mine. Mine were mostly ones, and he had a high percentage of twos. Twos that year weren't selling for anything, practically. They wouldn't bring back the cost
of production.
So that satisfied him then. Unless you have the figures, it would have been hard to explain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the fertilizer, you have to know a little bit about how to use it. So you won't use it ineffectively and run up a cost that you don't get your return back. So that's the reason I soaked my potatoes and made ones out of twos, where the ones did bring enough price to pay expenses and a little bit over.
Yeah.
So fertilizer, I found that I don't suppose you use much of it up in Tennessee, did you?
No.
You have better soil, but here in our sand... You
and it seemed like we used it, it lasts a long time.
Yeah, I imagine that's true.
It does. You have a clay soil.
You tell me how anything grows in this sand.
What?
AT&T in the research department, and they had many studies that they made. One was that they made a study of Florida. Their idea is to sort of predict what the development of the community is going to be.
Well, I'll tell you, that's everything is relative. I was talking to one of the garden clubs here not long ago, and they want to know about where things will grow and where they won't and so forth, and especially trees. And I said, well, on your good soils, you can plant such and such trees, and they won't need to be fertilized native trees. They'll do all right. And this lady in the group said, good soil, where do you find it? She was from Pennsylvania, where they have strong soil. Well, I said, they're better than some, but they're not like Pennsylvania. Good soil. But you are in an area here where you have close to your Tennessee type of soil. Mm-hmm. But it has been abused for many, many years, and it's not as good as it was naturally.
Well, that's the end of the evening. That's the end of the evening. Well, it's after 8 o'clock, and Mr. Needham was going home at 7, he figured, so he couldn't have to drive home in the dark. Talk for a long time. He got here about 5. Now, we didn't come in till supper till 7 o'clock, I don't guess. This is Saturday. The 5th of April, 1969, and this is Channel 2 Right, of the new reel, Louis Nealon, reel number 1. And this is Channel 2 Right, around 310. This is around 310, Channel 2 Right. And all this we have taped today. We taped about 300 this morning when Mr. Nealon was here with the Audubon people. Then he came back, and we've taped about exactly 2 hours since he came back. And I've got some on this little tape that I'll put in, too, because while I'm here, while he is out there looking, I taped that, too. So this is a little tape that took while we were walking around, taking a breather just before supper time.
For say, noticing trees.
Who will take them?
Well, two different birds will get them, but mockingbirds will get them too. But the cedar birds come up here along about Christmas time, and between Christmas and the 1st of February, and there won't be a berry left on the tree, but there'll be hundreds of little trees coming up around and swallow them and then droppings.
That's the waxwings?
Yeah, cedar waxwings.
I didn't
ate them out of all their food, and they didn't have anything when they came later. The robins came earlier this year, before Christmas.
The robins don't eat these.
Oh boy, they clean your tree. They'll stay with that tree till there isn't a berry on there. Hundreds of them.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
I didn't.
Very nutritious. They're sweet.
Yeah.
And they have enough sugar in there. That's the way nature provides distribution. The birds eat them and drop the seeds, and they'll come up all around.
Well, I know.
Like sweet berries, you get your race distributed.
We stopped at that at the cedar trees out here, and he looked up there and saw all those cedar berries. And that was his comments on the cedar berries. I didn't know about that. I told him I grew pokeberries, and we went out to see my pokeberries that are coming out.
Distributed.
You know,
old pokeberry then.
No, sir.
I don't have any in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
So I hadn't had an opportunity. I guess I just didn't see enough. I didn't
watch enough. Let me tell you, I grew up with pokeberries. And anything you grow up with, you kind of like. Or sometimes, of course, you dislike.
Yeah, mostly what you're acquainted with, you have some regard for.
And I think it's a beautiful shrub.
Yes, it is. It is.
And it grows way up there, you see.
Well,
once they get a start.
Your favorite here. You've got good soil. This is excellent soil before the white man came.
Yeah.
You know, the topsoil is pretty well gone.
Yeah.
But you may be restoring it because grazing doesn't take a
it
much
holds
out of
it
the
better.
Soil. It holds it better.
And you see, that stand, you see, the long, you know, those pokeberries stay there and they get established.
And, if the birds like them, robins come and eat my strawberries, but I don't complain too much. I cover them up with the screen, but they get under and get some, and I say, well, maybe there wouldn't be any strawberries if it wasn't for the birds. They eat up those miserable, you know, that bill bug, that sow bug? He isn't an insect. He's a crustacean.
Yeah.
Little bluish critter about as big as a fingernail when he grows up, and he gets under the leaves and everything. Well, the robins come and winter, and they turn all the leaves upside down and eat them all up.
Yeah.
And they'll eat my berries as fast as they make, if you let them.
Yeah.
So, nature is equalized. Oh, yeah, there they are.
I see.
That was quite a pokeberry bush, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yellow berries on that are called sugar berries.
Yeah.
They're sweet, and the birds eat them for winter food. When the frost's on the pumpkin and no bugs available, they need something to tide them over.
And what do you call it? Hackberry?
Hackberry, yeah. Celtus levigata, among us scientific people.
Little hackberry. Well, now, they grow right common around here, and you'll find them along the fence road.
Yeah, they're usually a water. Sounds good identification, but they have a long, let's see, these young leaves are not typical. Last time we were up at Olino on our bird walk, and we have appreciate him, Joe Little. He's a law professor, and he's a little bit tricky. I'm supposed to name all the trees and plants as we go through the woods. I was coming up from behind and standing there leaning like this against the tree. And when I came up lazily, he says, what tree is this I'm leaning against? It didn't have a leaf on it. I said, well, it's a pretty good sized tree. It hasn't got any leaves. But I can pull down this branch and look at the winter buds. There were no buds open. Oh, I said, that is sweet gum. Took his hand off and had been labeled sweet gum. He wouldn't let me see that. Oh, I'm thinking that. So, the three of them in my hardwood planting, but they're not adapted to our soil. On this kind of dirt, they'll do quite well,
mm-hmm.
But our sandy soil, no.
Is that right?
They begin to taper off when you get through southern. I never found them south of central Georgia.
Yeah.
And when nature stops, you better stop.
Well, Mr. Nealon, when I come here, they smell so good.
Oh, yes, there's a nice tree. I like them, but I have to plant mine on the typical soil, sandy soil they gave me.
Yeah.
And I can't do anything that the average forest owner can't do out there.
Yeah.
I won't be honest.
Yeah.
I won't give a fair test.
Yeah.
So mine, I haven't done much. But
that's the black locust we're talking about that grows around the trailer.
It's kind of the soil with a limestone clay underneath.
Yeah.
That's
all right.
Yeah.
Now you're that sweet?
Yeah. Boy, aren't they good?
That's pretty.
Yeah. Both pretty and fragrant.
Yeah. Now you'd be right now.
The orange fragrance here.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a grove back there.
Yeah, there's a big grove over there.
I didn't want to give him any competition. He's a man that you know.
Yeah.
But the carpenter bee is pretty prevalent, but I've never seen it in such numbers as you have.
Yeah.
Always only singly.
Oh?
You've never seen them swarming like this.
Oh, they come here and they just plentiful.
Yeah, you've been breeding them here. I didn't know. They must have found some wood that
it's that
might.
Western pine.
Western
cedar. Western cedar.
I found out in the woods that there's a dead branch.
What's that?
In the woods that there's a dead branch of cedar that's as thick as your wrist.
Oh, really?
Carpenter bee.
Well, that's what that says. This is,
now, this is a little more on the carpenter bee. We moved over from the trailer and the locusts over to the shed, and the bees were still out.
This is all that western cedar.
See, that must be what they call, well, it could be Port Orford cedar, but it could also be incense cedar. I can't tell by looking at it. I don't know those western woods that well.
Yeah. Well,
it's up and down the coast where the redwoods grow, and that's where that big Port Orford cedar, oh, 6 or 7 foot logs, magnificent logs. Japan. I don't think that's right. We should keep that for us. But then profit, profit.
Business, business.
Yeah, business, business. And I don't know, if you owned them, I guess you'd make a half million out of it too. But I think there should be some regulation on that. This country is going to be wood poor someday just because we shipped it all over the world.
Yeah.
Why don't they grow their own?
Yeah.
Helping them grow their own, but then I don't know how to give away what we need. Like these old magnolias, too.
Yeah.
Doubtless some of them were planted. Did you plant some cedar here, or were they volunteers?
Oh, these have been planted. This was here when I come, but it was just head high.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got limestone underneath.
Yeah.
Cedar likes limestone.
Yeah.
I'll go through Texas. I still watch ditch banks for soil. You know, blends and planting soils and everything. Soils underlie everything. Which you think about is gross, so I tell the wife to run into some cedar pretty soon. See the limestone in that ditch bank underneath? You may not go a half mile for the cedar to show everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Clear across the country, it's that way.
Mm-hmm.
In Florida, where you see native stands, they always limestone. Mm-hmm. I've seen them on the East Coast. The Indians had shell mounds there, 5 and 6 feet high.
Yeah.
Cedar stands right in the middle of it. How'd those roots ever get through those oyster shells down to the ground? But they're doing fine.
Yeah.
Limestone. Deteriorating shells and turning into limestone. Very lime-loving tree.
Mr. Nealon, let me tell you.
They don't bake up anything. I spend some of my money.
Yeah.
And sometimes more than I can afford in conservation. For instance, those magnificent redwoods out there, they're going to be gone forever.
Yeah.
And I send them $5 every year. The state matches that with $5, and the federal government matches every $5 I give, it's $15. When 1,000 people do that, we soon get enough money to buy 1,000 acres forever.
Well, how do they match it? You mean?
The government matches it.
Who do you send it to?
I send it to the, well, say the Redwoods League,
yeah,
is one of
yeah,
the big ones.
Yeah.
And the Sierra Club would be another one.
Yeah.
You can see that it's.
And the government matches it in the Sierra Club?
The state of California matches it, and so does the federal government, unless Mr. Hickel stops all that. I
yeah,
don't know.
I see.
So many thousand acres have been bought, but it would be a crime to destroy that.
Yeah.
It's not only a magnificent tree,
well,
but the canyons
yeah,
are marvelous.
Now, what I was thinking is,
of course, we've talked to the Audubon and belong to the Nature Conservancy, and all of those groups are in favor of inviolate areas. I tell the foresters, you need an area undisturbed completely for educational purposes, so that
mm-hmm,
you learn how nature does it. And
but they want to share it all, don't
oh,
they?
Oh, they never heard of such a thing. No.
Yeah.
But we need it. We need it for training people. Not only do we need it for educational purposes and relaxation and all that, we need
see
to get
there,
out.
They just swarm all around there.
We need to get out where it's quiet sometime and away from this high
yeah,
pressure life
yeah,
we lead.
Just not be right in the midst of everything.
No. We need a place such as the big, what do they call that place in Texas? No, not the big swamp, the ivory building there.
Yeah.
And you can't go in there if you have a motor in some lakes and ponds and streams in there, but you can't take a power-driven boat in there, or you're restricted on where you go with the car, and you can't go in. It's an inviolate area, and I appreciate that. It's folks like us that are backing up the national forest. In that area, of course, national forests permit cutting of timber. But the national forest where the ivory bill is making its last stand has declared a 1,000-acre area where no, it's untouchable. Trying to save the bird, for one thing, and trying to keep an area true wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
No, the only thing, it's so remote in there that the slaves that ran away moved into that swamp and subsisted off the land
mm-hmm,
for the rest of their lives. Didn't have to come out to civilization. They could find enough fish and food right there in the woods in that big swamp.
Oh, we ought to have just, we ought not to drain all that and
no,
clear it all.
No, we overdo all that.
Yeah. You know, it don't take any brains at all to do that.
No.
But it takes the right smart brains to preserve it.
Well, it's not only that. Politicians are interested in only one thing, to be elected. And up until now, they get elected if they cater to the people with power, with influence.
Yeah.
And they'd sell their souls, and they'd sell you and all your rights down the river if
yes,
it got them reelected.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
That's right.
And these big campaign contributions from the big oil people, they'll make a $40,000 campaign contribution and get $1 million back in tax relief,
mm-hmm,
or $2 million.
Yeah.
All that is wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong as can be. When 130 millionaires are listed that make $1 million every year, many people were for saving the Elk Lawaho and Black
Park.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this one's more like a little. All three of these horses really take off now.
Well, when I was a boy, I had to go 3 miles to the mail, little country store where they had the mail. And I'd come thundering in there on my pony in a cloud of dust.
Yeah.
Now I complain about it.
Yeah.
Well, we were all boys once.
Yes, sir.
Ten generous and just boys care but little whom they trust.
They're coming up to tell me that they are ready to eat a little bit.
Yeah.
They have a way of speaking, don't they?
Yeah, they let you know.
Yes, sir.
What is the mineral in the box there?
Yeah. A little supplement.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's real food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But, I guess now people are enjoying the horse and buggy ride again.
Yeah.
Or what do you call horse people?
Well, just people have horses.
Oh, just owners.
Any of them, you know. I don't.
Well, I grew up with them, and I can't. How's the old boy? Says, do you have anything?
Yeah.
I don't know you. You have anything that interests me? I know.
Yeah.
I know horses, but it's all wasted knowledge. There's no more use for it.
Yeah. Mr. Nealon reached over and found a sprig of that keen grass is coming out and handed it to a little man. And he looked over at it and then smelled it. Then ate it, and we came on to the house for supper. So that's the end of the taping for today. On Saturday, April 1969. It's bedtime, almost 9 o'clock. Is that clock right? That's right, Constitution. And so it's 5:70. Channel 2 right, 5:70, and this is the end of the long taping session with Louis Nealon on Saturday, starting with the Audubon visit, and then when they came back out and had a little bite to eat with us.
This is Saturday, the 11th of October, 69. We've just had our Audubon trip. Mr. Nealon came in to catch his breath a little bit before it goes on. And it's grass is still green this October on this first little Audubon trip. We've just been clear around the swamp and come in. And this is Saturday, the 11th of October, 69. This is Channel 2 right around 600. 6:50. Around 6:50. Who do you see at homecoming?
Oh, all the profs have passed on, of course.
Yeah.
But a few of the classmates are still around. There's you.
Yeah.
If I see three, that's about the crop.
Yeah.
I used to see more, but one by one, the wives are not equal to it, so they don't come.
Where do you run into them?
Usually run into them on the campus, wherever they have the free coffee and donuts.
Or is that the headquarters, kind of where?
Yeah, that's somewhere near where, it used to be close to the law building.
Yeah.
A little bit south of the law building, but now that the law building is where it is, I haven't found out where the old-timers get together. But all the various departments, the forestry school meets there, and the engineers, and the agricultural people, and the lawyers, and the teachers. There's more than you can be in class with than like others. But,
you just pass time today. You don't ever actually find out much from them, do you?
Not too much, no. Just mostly somebody else grabbing by the time you say hello and say a long time since I've seen you, old timer,
yeah.
And then you lose contact.
Yeah.
And then be somebody after that. It's not too satisfactory.
Yeah.
You just say howdy and you can't do much more. Now and then you can get with some special friend that you can get a few words with. But I've been around there a long, long time. Been 13.
What's that?
I finished up my little course of training in 1913.
Yeah.
I have a certificate. Didn't give degrees in those days.
Yeah.
But in those days, they let the lawyers in for no more free education than I had. If you had an 8th grade certificate, that got you into the law school.
I can't hear you too well. I can't hear you too well.
Oh, what's the matter with me? Oh, do I need to talk a little louder? With me, it isn't loudness, it's clarity.
Yeah.
And I put my hand up because it gives my ear a little more vibration and it comes clearer then.
Oh, really?
And so people think I can't hear, and they talk much louder than they need to.
Oh, I see.
I'm like the old colonel who says he had the same complaint I had, and he said, I could hear them all right if people didn't mumble so.
Yeah.
See, it didn't come clear. People weren't mumbling, his ear was mumbling like mine.
Yeah.
But when I put my hand up, it comes a little more clear.
Yeah.
I guess putting it up against the skull there, maybe the empty places would give back little echoes or something.
Yeah.
Well, my trouble is if the wife just gives me no end of trouble. She'll be preparing lunch and talking into the cabinet. Ruins me. If she would turn around and talk, it'd be perfectly clear.
Yeah.
But if I have to hear it from the side, it makes it worse. And then if there's any competing noise, for instance, a radio going or television going somewhere nearby, then I can't hear what I want to hear. Fields where everything is quiet, and I want to hear that lark sing at a distance. The Western lark has a wonderful song.
Yeah.
And there comes a breeze, roar, and drowns out the lark.
Yes. Well, now, you know, that's right. And you wear a helmet. I remember that in the Army we had that old steel helmet.
Yeah.
And the wind would whistle through that just like in the wintertime.
Yes, that's so. Make it hard for you to hear. Well, I can see that. That cripples you. Now, if you and I were sitting out on a log in the woods where everything was quiet, you wouldn't think I was hard of hearing.
Yeah.
Perfectly well.
Yeah.
But if there's chatter around them.
Yeah. Now, that Western lark, we don't have a real lark here, do we?
No, I think the furthest east is in Kansas, probably Western Kansas.
Yeah.
But he isn't the same as the Pacific Coast lark. The Pacific Coast lark is larger. You can hear him clear as a bell across a 10-acre field, just as if he were by you.
Oh, really?
And he has a series of at least 9 notes in a row, and often he repeats some, and it's a wonderful tone.
No, I never heard anything like that.
No, you don't have them. In Western Kansas, they say the farmer, the Western lark, the Central lark is there, but he sings somewhat like the California lark, and the farmers say, he says, I got wheat to sow, wheat to sow. They're wheat.
You know the Western lark?
No.
You haven't heard a lark say, I got wheat to sow. Well, then you haven't heard the Western lark, because I don't think he comes much further than Western Kansas, but I don't know. I wouldn't be sure of that.
Now, this little, do you call this little meadow lark? Is he a real lark?
Yeah, that's a sea lark. You know, here in the deep south, we don't like to strain our voices, so instead of saying sea lark, why, we just say sea lark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easier.
Well, now you can't hear him very far, and he doesn't have much of a melody.
Dad used to say, see, when the war, I came home one time, he had this low ground asthma. And the reason I didn't come back to the university claim my job, I got off on a furlough and got in at 10 o'clock at night, and here he was sitting at the table zipping a little kerosene. He said, it's the only thing that keeps me breathing. When they burned the woods, that smog settled there, and this low ground asthma, he couldn't lie down, he'd choke. So I said, when this war's over, I'm taking over this piece of dirt, and you go back to the hills where you can breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So he did. Mm-hmm. So then I was on the little old truck farm we had there, and I hadn't been there but 2 months or 3 before they made me county agent there. The only qualified man in the county, they said. It didn't occur to him to go to the next county and get a good man.
No, that's right. They'd use any somebody in their own county.
Well, it, in those days, those were early days, you know, and people made do with what they had, and they didn't go any further than they had to either.
Yeah.
they adjusted to what they had. So I was there, and they heard I'd been to college. So, well, I found out later what they wanted. The only thing they wanted the county evening for was to vaccinate all the hogs in the county free because cholera was showing up. And in those days, those were self-sufficient farmers. They didn't need government aid. It was open range. They had cattle on the range and hogs on the range. And the hogs subsisted in the swamp somehow or other. If they got away from the bear or the catamount, whatever they call the puma. So they were rugged things, long-snouted, rugged critters. And it was something, you know, to get in there and tend to vaccinate some of them. Well, I'll tell you, it was dangerous. They were guarded just like a tiger. And so I remember that last one I vaccinated, we had a stout farm boy there to help me. They trapped them in log pens down by the swamp. And he wouldn't get in there with him, try to catch him by the hind leg and throw him because he was too vicious. He'd charge you immediately. He wouldn't give you a chance to get behind him. So he got him a rope, and he tried to get that around him, and finally, when he saw that loop of the rope, he grabbed that, and then he gave the snatch, and it had a running loop in it, so he had him. And you know how a hog is. If you catch him by the nose or ear, he doesn't know anything but to rear back. He pulls back, he doesn't do anything but pull back. So then I shot him fore and aft with the serum and the virus, and then it was his problem to get that rope out of his mouth and get back up again out of there. But he managed it somehow or other, fiddling with it. He got it loose, and then when it got loose enough, he watched his chance, and he was still in there with him, and he snapped it out and jumped to the top rail, and that hog right after him didn't miss the seat of his pants quarter of an inch, I don't think, and threw his legs up over and just escaped.
Well, now, he
cussed on that long, you know.
Well, now, you didn't do that all day, Mr. Nealon.
Well, we vaccinated till the herd was done, then go to the next one. Most of them were like that. Now, a few of the farmers had gentle hogs, regular hogs, but I had to vaccinate them all, and some across the county line because the county agent, he was a qualified man. He had a four-year course, but he didn't know how to vaccinate. I happened to come in when they taught a very good practical course in veterinary science, and it helped me a lot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I got in there, and when they had the hogs vaccinated, then they had no more use for me. But I had other ideas, and because they didn't think a college boy, he knew, didn't know anything. Your reputation gets ahead of you, you know. Somehow or other, little things I was able to do for them. You know, like one man, we had a farmer's telephone line. He called me up one night, maybe I told you about that, and he said his cow was about to die if he got into a barrel of potatoes. And I said, well, hold everything, and I dumped my Model T. It was late in the evening, and I was already back home. And ran down there, and here was that poor cow standing there, blown up like a balloon, weaving back and forth, about ready to fall. And she'd fallen, she'd ruptured internally. Just blown up something terrible. Well, I should have a trocar and cannula to alleviate the trouble, but they didn't supply me with any veterinary tools, so I out with my jackknife, I measured the distance from the hip bone to the last rib where I could see a little more elevation there. Popped that knife in, gave it a twist, and sounded like a policeman's whistle, and bits of potatoes flew up 6 feet high.
Well, I missed it either.
And I knew what to do, but didn't have the right tools, but twisting that opened up enough cavity to let the gas escape, and it wasn't but 15 minutes later before that cow walked away and was perfectly all right to save the cow. Well, a few things like that that you know and can help people with, well, they get gradually get a little more confidence that the guy, the fellow may know something.
Mr. Neal, on that cholera, is that difficult, cholera shot?
On what?
Cholera shot.
Oh, no, it's not difficult. You just have to know the weight, the approximate weight of the animal for dosage. And the virus gives them the cholera, and the serum prevents the virus from spreading through the body.
But the farmers then never did any vaccinating of their own.
No, mine, no, wouldn't touch it. I remember the first ones I vaccinated, I only had about 50 or 60 in the man's herd. I left there after vaccinating them. You have to keep your needle and material always sterilized. And so I heard one neighbor had told the other, you know, he didn't kill him, one of mine. They expected I would kill those all. Well, in those days they had no training in anything like medicine. And so any little thing that you know how to do, why, it seems to stand out.
Yeah.
Almost the first thing when I was appointed, a farmer let me know that his mules were bad off. Urine was as red as blood. So I said, well, I'll come down and see. I didn't have my Model T yet. So I hitched up the mules and 3 miles away and drove down there. And I said, what you been doing with these mules, the Melfords? Well, he said, I've been working them for the last 3 months hard. They were fine looking animals, strong and fat. And then when the work gave out, I left them in the pen, and now this has happened. Well, I said, you fed them plenty while you were working. Yeah, fed them all they could eat. And, I said, and you fed them all they could eat since you put them in the pen, too. Nothing to do for day after day. Yeah, I sure they did. Well, I said, you give them plenty of water and plenty of hay, but not 1 ounce of grain. In 2-3 days, those mules would be well. Well, those are things you have to know before you can prescribe anything. Well, he saved my mules. There's another voice that says, well, he helped me on that.
Yeah.
And so on. So little by little, they gained confidence in them. And then I started 4-H club work in the county with, well, I had girls and boys. The babies hadn't arrived yet, and wife had some spare time, so every Saturday afternoon I drove in a 5-mile radius all around and gathered up all the little girls, and we put them through the regular extension first and second year sewing course, and they all had to make a garment.
Yeah, that right.
And so that was part of it. And then the boys, of course, they carried on different work, and then I started the first 4-H forestry club work in the state. That was 5 years before we had a state forest. So.
This is the end of Channel 2, right? Mr. Nealon at the kitchen table. Visit of the Audubon people. Saturday the 11th of October, 69. The end of Channel 2, right? Mr. Nealon in the kitchen with the Audubon visit on Saturday the 11th of October, 69. At the kitchen, in the kitchen, on the Audubon group.